objectives. The second objective, we call the California approach, because California really has been the leader in this, developing a model. And they have, we've been in close contact with them, and they've agreed to kind of be informal advisors to us, and will help us proceed with development of it. The oversight committee did also agree on a general approach to the project, and we looked at it really from two standpoints. One would be one in which we basically contract out a majority of the work, and internally we know we'd still have to do a lot of support work in working with a contractor, developing the model and learning how to use it. The other approach would be to build it more in-house, and the oversight committee did recommend the building in-house approach. And the reasons for that is we define the in-house as including Oregon resources, including the university system. And so with the release of the funding from the E-Board, we plan to sign an interagency agreement with Oregon State. Bruce Weber, who I think many of you know, will head the project up at OSU. Ed has worked very closely with Bruce over the years, and Ed is very knowledgeable in this area. So he will work on it. We have a model building team within state government. We also have an opportunity to get Dave Holland, who is a professor at Washington State, who's on sabbatical, and he's also very knowledgeable in this area. So I think we're fortunate to be able to build a good in-house a team to do this. And you can see kind of the timeline we've laid out for that. And we'll be keeping the committee updated as we go along. And we will have a report ready for the revenue committee for the O1 session. And have a tool I think hopefully will be valuable to you in tax policy. And I see our chair has returned, so you may want to.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Bill, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Oh, just briefly, I think the real opportunity here for legislators is that as we look at proposed changes to the tax code, we'll have a better, more thorough understanding of the implications of those changes as it relates to revenue and the tax burden impact as it works its way through the system. So I think it's something that's really been long overdue, and I think it'll be a real valuable tool that will be available to future legislatures that's really going to help us more effectively design a tax code that's both fair and equitable, and at the same time it's rational but makes sense as we look at changes in that tax code.
Sure. I know that Representative Butler.
Just one question. In the process of dynamic modeling, will it then dynamic model expense issues as well as revenue issues? Or just the revenue impact?
Representative Butler, we will use what's called a computable general equilibrium model, a CGE model. It does have potential capacity to look at the expenditure side of the budget as well. One of the assumptions you have to make is if you're going to, for example, reduce taxes, are you going to reduce spending by an offsetting amount? Now, in the short run, usually you have to do that to maintain a balanced budget. So you have to make some assumptions on the expenditure side. And what we hope to be able to do, and I think this will be more difficult than the tax side even, but to look at some expenditure items such as infrastructure, highway expenditures, school expenditures, we can at least look at those in terms of a short-run feedback effect. Some of them, school, for example, economists have spent decades trying to trace through the productivity effects and so forth. We know they're out there, but there's still a lot of controversy about how to measure that productivity. So the expenditure side is something we'll look at, but probably will be secondary to the tax.
I see. Thank you.
Representative Beck? I'm curious whether this will, whether you intend to incorporate certain things we don't tax today. And, I mean, will you be able to take, let's say, real estate transfers or a whole array of services that we don't tax, might start thinking about taxing and how, let's say, taxing advertising, legal services, architecture services. sorry, gentlemen. Will this have the capacity to say, this is how much advertising is done or billed or somehow measured in Oregon, and if we were to tax it, point something percent, we could raise this much money, and vice versa. We'll be able to, will we be looking at volumes of other activities that we currently don't even imagine taxing?
Representative Beck, you know, I think, and if you think back on my overhead on most dependent state on a single tax source, on the personal income tax, and whether we actually ever have fundamental tax reform or not is anybody's guess. But one thing I feel very safe in predicting is we'll get a lot of proposals in terms of changing the revenue system because, and I think there's, you know, the fundamental tax reform issue will always be out there given our revenue system. So one of our objectives is to set up this model up so that we can analyze some of those proposals.
We could, and that's why I'm asking the question. Your presentation early, they couldn't be more frightening, really, to someone new in this committee. But
well, we certainly anticipate that. Now, there are some limits, certainly, in terms of very specific kinds of proposals about whether the model would be appropriate to use them. Certainly major consumption tax proposals, made taxes of key industries, for example, we'll be able to use the model to analyze those things. One of the issues that I think will come up with the Oversight Committee is to define some criteria for when it is appropriate to use the model during session.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay,
just to further elaborate and respond to Representative Beck's question, today we can look at the impact of a tax change, but we get a kind of a flat analysis that doesn't incorporate the behavioral changes that individuals will make in response to the tax change.
Right.
What this new dynamic modeling will do is it will be an intelligent attempt to incorporate the behavioral changes that people will make in response to the change in the tax code to give a more true, more accurate picture of what the tax implications are of some proposed change in the tax code.
And presumably maybe show no behavioral change.
Presumably.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask Mr. Warner if my colleague, Representative Beck, had left any industry out that he wasn't going to tax.
Fence builders.
Oh, okay. Plumbers.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thanks. I was very supportive of this concept, although lately I've been into economists in other states who seem skeptical about the value of this kind of analysis. And so I guess the question I have right now is, are we going to be, once we adopt a methodology, do you test it by looking backward retrospectively at projections that were made about changes and seeing under this method, would they have come, I mean, did they come true?
That'll get you in trouble, Mr. Rasmussen, the talk to economists. no doubt about that. There are certainly, you're dealing with a large, complicated economic system, and there's no question that there is room for a range of responses in terms of both of timing and magnitude. And you know, the specific question of testing, yes, we can test the model in terms of history, but if you look at something, for example, a major change like a consumption tax. You know, there we're really in an area where you've got a fundamental change in the system, and no model's going to be able to anticipate everything that occurs. But I think what this will do is to give you a framework to look at those issues and tell you which of the parameters are most important, which are the things that are most likely to happen, and what are reasonable kinds of assumptions about those responses. And what we intend to do is make sure we maintain an oversight and a review committee to look at those, look at the model, continually update it, and to make sure it's done in the most objective way possible. I think, you know, certainly for major proposals, there's going to be a wide range of potential error. But in my view, it's better information than not having anything.
Hey, before we break for lunch, I want to ask Paul to give us a brief update on Kim James, our office manager in the Revenue Committee, and some medical issues that she's going through.
Okay. Well, Kim has successfully undergone surgery on her hip, actually the day before Thanksgiving. So I don't know if she kind of planned it that way. I don't know why. But She did, and I talked to her earlier this week. She's home now and is on crutches and seems to be doing pretty well. She will be back with us in January. Joan has been generously doing two jobs, coming down from policy and research to help us a few hours a day and to be committee assistant today. But Kim should be back with us in January. Unfortunately, she has to undergo a similar surgery on her other hip in another year or so. So she's going to do this twice, but I think she'll be a lot better off when it's done. And she's been a real trooper in facing it. And we miss her, though, but she'll be back soon.
And also, members, don't forget to fill out your per diem sheets that are here. And, John, I'm sure we'll pick these up maybe during the break or after the end of the meeting. This afternoon, we'll be looking at the most recent December forecast for economic forecast and also talking about Measure 76, the cost responsibility measure that passed in the November elections. And so we will recess until 1:30.
One.